go, baby.
It's time for the Return of the Empire podcast. 1 hour of all things red and gold. Return of the Empire. Here are your hosts, Sacktown Sports 49ers insider Emil Fragoso and Nate Littlefield.
That's right. Emil Fragoso here in studio. Return of the Empire live, episode 3, I believe, Kyle.
This is number 3.
Number 3. Wow, we're just getting used to this live show format here on YouTube as well as on Sacktown Sports, sacktownsports.com. As you notice, my co-host Nate Littlefield is not here with us today. Unfortunately, he has fallen under the weather. Nate, we send our prayers and love to you as you recover. Hopefully, you get back on your feet very, very quickly. But in his place, I got a pretty good alternate in my guy Kyle Ledbetter on the ones and twos.
Hello, everybody. I am not Nate. However, I am very happy to be here to talk some 49ers football.
Yeah, Kyle, you know a good amount of football. Obviously, you cover the Cardinals as well on your own podcast, on your own stuff. But you also know a little bit about the Niners and kind of their journey as well.
Oh, absolutely. I have been so fascinated with the 49ers for so many years, not just because I live here in Northern California, Sacktown, and the Niners are obviously Sacramento's team, but also it's just been really interesting to follow this team because everything about them is not normal, from the ability to what I joke is fart out Pro Bowlers out of the fourth and fifth rounds of the draft, and everything with Trey Lance and Garoppolo and trading for Christian. There's just been nothing normal about this run for the Niners. So infinitely interested by them and glad we get to chat about them for an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the interesting and unusual, Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant of last year, is the real deal, I'd say, Kyle. More than a game manager, I'd say, Kyle.
More than Jimmy Garoppolo, but less than Patrick Mahomes. Somewhere in the middle.
It's a pretty good spot to be at for Brock Purdy, second year quarterback.
I would agree. It's just a very wide gulf about how good or bad that quarterback is.
Absolutely. And so we're going to recap Niners-Rams week 2. Obviously, the Niners won 30-23 at SoFi Stadium, or as we like to call it, Levi's South, because if you looked at the cameras and you looked at across the stadium, it was mostly some red and gold.
It was red and gold. I want to say like 75%. Yeah. I mean, ballpark. The stadium wasn't full entirely either. There was also some empty seats posing as Rams fans, but let's call it 70-75%.
Some robots maybe there like last week. You never know.
No, they only do that for the Chargers when the stadium is truly empty.
Because they really have no fans. It's okay. They're all in San Diego. We feel bad for you, Chargers. It's okay.
Yes, recovering Charger fan over here. Born and raised in San Diego.
Yes,
and
he is.
Yeah, the team left when I was 16.
So. San Diegan on the board for us.
You're damn right, but no longer a Charger fan. We're here in Niners country now.
Yes, we are. And to talk Niners, we're starting with Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy, you know, had a, I don't want to say a bad game, but one of his worst games of his pro career so far. You know, he finished 17 for 25 passing, 206 yards, a 93 passer rating, one rushing touchdown. But he had a couple, you know, overthrows that he missed, you know, a couple deep shots that you would hope he'd hit, but, you know, he's not really known for his arm. And frankly, the overthrow part is kind of the interesting thing because we thought he couldn't do it. And so, Kyle, you have some audio there talking to Brock Purdy. You know, he owned up. He talked about it afterwards, you know, I got to do this. I'm an NFL quarterback. I got to make these throws. And that was really revealing. But Kyle, hit the tape.
You know, probably a lot. But we got, you know, 4 days to get ready for this next game. But, yeah, in my eyes, you know, there's a couple of opportunities obviously out there that, you know, I missed in terms of the deep ball and whatnot. So, but found a way to win. So,
anything specific you can point to for why you missed those?
Nah, it's just, you know, I just overthrew him, you know, on the one, the BA, the one, Debo, and then JJ on that third down. Yeah, it's just those are on me. I got to be better. I got to hit him in stride and not overthrow him. Simple as that. No, I don't think so. You know, we've hit those, you know, deep balls and whatnot at practice and everything. It's just, you know, it comes down when the bullets are flying, being able to make an accurate throw and, you know, not overthrow him, don't underthrow him, but just be on point. And so, you know, that's what you got to do as an NFL quarterback, and I take that on myself.
Yeah, real revealing there, Kyle. You know, a quarterback as young as Brock Purdy, 23 years old, about to be 24 years old at the end of the year, to really own up to his mistakes. You know, not all quarterbacks do that. You saw this week with Justin Fields, you know, kind of blaming the offensive coordinator, blaming, you know, other players, you know, and he had a lackluster game himself. But for a guy like Brock Purdy, who really has a chip on his shoulder, a lot of moxie out there, to take accountability for, I just, you know, messed up. That's really revealing of how his character is.
And justified or not, the excuse game is something that doesn't go great over in the NFL.
No, it doesn't.
You can point to like examples of Zach Wilson last year. You mentioned Justin Fields, who might be justified in some of his criticisms. The Bears haven't exactly supported him all that great, but doesn't necessarily go over all that great. Brock taking accountability is a plus, and it's a really interesting space he finds himself in, because you mentioned the stats from the game. He had a passer rating of 93.1. Now, for those listening at home, the league average passer rating is 91.6.
Yes.
That's like an average NFL quarterback. Derek Carr is 91.6.
Sure.
So if a league average passer rating is 91.6, Brock was technically above the average, and it was also his lowest passer rating since his first start of his NFL career.
Yeah.
Which is a cushy position to find yourself in. He's still above average despite the fact it was his worst start since his first NFL start. So the 49ers are in an interesting position where he didn't play all that great, but he was also still doing enough for them to get by. And obviously, no passing touchdowns, but also no interceptions. You can live with that.
Yeah, and that's what Kyle Shanahan talked about after the game. You know, he's like, you know, I'm not really concerned with the overthrows, frankly. You know, he hits those shots in practice like Brock was talking about. What he was more concerned with is the fact that he protected the ball and didn't turn over. You know, Kyle, there was a little snippet, you know, a couple Niner fans saw after the game in the locker room. They show, you know, little, you know, pep talks and kind of, you know, the recap and stuff. And Kyle really said, you know, the big difference in this game was that the Rams had two turnovers and we had zero. And that was the truth. That's why they won the game. And if Brock Purdy can just keep doing that, and if this is, you know, his worst, you know, performance, if this is the low of it all, Niner fans are going to take that everywhere.
I was listening to Papa and Ryan on the broadcast, and they kind of said the same thing in the post game. They were like, not only were there no turnovers, there weren't really any close calls either. Like, they were really good at protecting the ball, and this is the beauty of having the talent the 49ers have. You can turn a subpar or above average game from the quarterback and produce 159 rushing yards and technically three rushing touchdowns on the other side of it. Because I think they called the Debo one a rushing one, technically.
They did. Yes, they did. And that was a really good play. But just to wrap up this Brock talk, I love what this kid represents. I love what he does because, you know, a guy who was a Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick in the draft, no one expects him to be anything in the NFL. He was great at Iowa State, all that. That's college. That's in the past. To come to the Bay Area, to come to the Niners, a hostile environment, a very passionate fan base like the faithful, and to perform the way he has and take on the ownership that he has and to not be rattled, to be stay calm in the pressure moments, go into opposing houses and just own the moment. It just says so much to me about this kid.
I think so, and I think we have slowly but steadily built up a sample size large enough to recognize that this Brock Purdy thing is at the very least real, because that was the thing I was saying before, is like, we have a very small sample size and a strange sample size because of how much talent he has around him. The same reason why Jimmy Garoppolo was a top 10 passer rating in the league last year, when we knew he wasn't performing to that ability. That's what part of the talent around him helps with. So I think we're slowly getting a representative sample size that, like Micah Parsons was arguing this week, Brock Purdy just might be a top 15 quarterback in the NFL.
I think he's definitely established himself that way. I think Brock definitely looks, you look at all the other quarterback prospects, and Brock kind of looks the best out of all of them. Maybe we can make an argument, Sam Howell's looking good. You know, Jordan Love's kind of coming on. Trevor Lawrence might be legit. But Brock has really done the most of what he has, and I know he has a great offensive line, and he's got weapons everywhere. He's got, you know, Christian McCaffrey at running back, all these, you know, all this, you know, plethora of riches at his disposal. But you got to make the throws still, and he's making them accurately and making them confidently in the pocket. And there's one play in particular, you know, he sees the edge rusher coming off the right side, slides over and then up, and while running at him, you know, pre-rusher in his face, delivers a strike to Ayuk right in the middle on the slant, and it was perfect. And if he can make those throws, they'll forgive all the other stuff because he will hit him eventually.
Making throws on the run is such a luxury in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is trying to now, just because that's kind of what the game necessitates, as everyone incorporates spread offenses, as everyone tries to adapt zone running schemes into their offense. Like, being able to complete passes and complete passes with time on the run is such a luxury. And if Brock is able to do that, that adds a whole nother dimension to the 49ers game, because as much as we said good things about Garoppolo or said bad things about Garoppolo, no one was ever saying, this guy's great when he's rolling out of the pocket and looking down the field.
Garoppolo, not really mobile. We kind of saw that in the Bills-Raiders game over the weekend. But anyways, moving on to other key takeaways from the Niners, you know, week two win over the Rams. Brandon Ayuk, and we just mentioned him earlier. Brandon Ayuk unfortunately suffered a shoulder injury on his first catch of the day early in the first quarter, and he went down, was seen in some visible pain on his left shoulder, and their test came back today. There is no, it seems, you know, break to his clavicle, anything like that. It's really more of a pain tolerance thing, but with the short turnaround this week, it is something to monitor. He is a limited participant at practice this week and was today after having a no practice on their quote-unquote off day on Monday, so that's something to look forward to. But Kyle, is this one of the situations where it's like it's better to rest one of your star guys on a really short week?
I'm always going to opt in favor of caution, especially with a team like the 49ers, where a lot of the purpose of the regular season is to get your team healthy for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I know that's always a difficult game to play, where it's like your team is so good that you know you'll make the playoffs even if you sit key player. Like, that's always a difficult game to play, especially in the NFL with random sample sizes. But yeah, I'm always going to err on the side of caution, especially with a player who the 49ers regard as one of the foundational pieces of their offense. I know that's kind of crazy to say with Brandon Ayuk now, but he is almost just important as any player you can point to on that offensive side of the ball.
Absolutely. I think he is the purest wideout they have on that team. If you don't know, now you know. Brandon Ayuk is a superstar and coming into his own. I think it was really telling that he was able to play through that pain in the game, you know, suffering injury early on. Not everyone can play through that. It's painful to run and catch passes, you know, with the banged up shoulder so early on. And to be able to, you know, he finished with only three catches, 43 yards, six targets. But to just, you know, keep running his routes and keep being a factor while playing hurt, it says so much about his character and overall, you know, willpower to want to win for the Niners.
You might remember better than I. Wasn't a 49ers player this offseason saying they thought Ayuk was going to be like a top five receiver this year or a top 10 receiver?
Yeah, Diamador Lenore.
Diamador Lenore said that. So what was so funny is I'm hearing that, and in my mind I'm thinking it makes sense. You know, he's taking a bigger role in the offense. Debo is probably taking a lesser role in the offense than the guy who's running and catching, and back in 2021, the season where he was doing everything and wanted to be paid like a running back slash receiver. And, you know, he's probably taken back a role. So just the fact that he came right out the gate and just was excellent. I mean, I know he got hurt in the first quarter of this game, but for an offense that didn't play all that well, I'm looking up the numbers right here. Ayuk still had the three catches for 43 yards, a lot of middle of the field stuff during the game. So just the fact that he came out the gate playing so well and looked like he might be the number one receiver on the Niners was very, very interesting to see happen. And look, if it's an injury that will have long-lasting effects, then definitely err on the side of caution. I haven't seen the latest injury report, but like you described, a lot of it's a pain tolerance thing.
Yeah. It's even a limited participant today, and they're kind of, you know, actual day. They're going to have one day of practice this week because of the turnaround. Tomorrow will be just walkthroughs, but today, and an actual practice, it was a limited, you know, half speed kind of day for him while they, you know, make sure he doesn't, you know, injure it further. And so Ayuk playing through that really, really shows his character. And last week you mentioned his stats, eight catches, eight targets, 129 yards and two touchdowns. I mean, when he's fully healthy, he's a monster. No one can really contain him. And Ayuk's a star. But in terms of other people on this team, other standouts, I got to throw it to CMC. You know, CMC really is kind of the focal point of the Niners offense. One of their bell cow guys. He, you know, they didn't want to, at least there were reports, they didn't want to use him as a bell cow 15 to 20 touches a game at max. He has an injury history in the past. But they really used him like a bell cow this week. You know, 20 carries, 116 yards, one rushing touchdown. Additionally, you know, three catches, 19 yards as well. So he was really in there most of the game. Elijah Mitchell saw zero rushes, zero. And that's their second guy up there. And, you know, as much as I love McCaffrey, I would love to see, you know, the other running backs get involved as well, because they got a lot of talented guys up that roster.
Imagine telling 2021 Emil or 2021 Nate that in 2 years, not only is Kyle Shanahan going to run an offense that is predicated on one running back, it's going to be a running back and nobody else is going to get touches the rest of the game.
I know. You know, the days of Raheem Mostert and Matt Breida, you know, all the split snaps and all that great stuff. Even Carlos Hyde, if you want to throw out a name.
Jeff
Wilson Jr. Thank you. I appreciate that one in the Miami Dolphins.
Tevin Coleman twice.
Tevin Coleman last year put up some stats, though, last year. You can't argue that.
No, I totally understand. But when Elijah Mitchell was the one who had a 100-yard game, that was the one where I was finally like, I've seen six of you before this. I know this isn't... This isn't the next great running back of the NFL. I've seen six of you in this offense before that.
Yeah, like you said, Kyle, they kind of fart out running backs that are productive.
Yeah, I know. And it doesn't make any sense. Right? Like, football's hard enough to understand. Now try understanding an offense that even football people don't understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And CMC actually talked about that workload today, you know, and he wasn't really too concerned. He was more of like, whatever I have to do for the team, I'm willing to do. If it's, you know, 20 carries, if it's 10 carries, whatever it is, I'm willing to do it for the team. So let's get a listen.
I think it's all dependent on how the game's going. You know, we had a lot of breaks last game. Sometimes that's just how it goes. There's going to be games, too, where, you know, Mitchell get 4 or 5 carries in a row on multiple drives because he's playing well and feeling them and all that. So it's really such a situational thing that, you know, I don't think it's ever a plan for one of us to get all the carries or not. It's just sometimes that's just how some of the games go.
Yeah, and Kyle kind of aired the same thing, you know, said, you know, I have to do a better job of getting Elijah Mitchell in that game plan. That wasn't the game plan at all, but that's how it worked out. And so I think that just, you know, part of the game, ebb and flow, they got to make sure they get all the guys involved. But at the end of the day, McCaffrey was excellent. And are you surprised? No, we're really not. He's one of the best running backs in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, the workload conversation is interesting just because of the injury history. Mm-hmm. We haven't really talked as much about this. Have you been following, like, what's happening with the Colorado and Deion closely at all?
Yeah, I have been a little bit.
So the thing that I said is, like, with Travis Hunter playing both sides of the ball is that it's really fun until injuries start, right? Because mm-hmm. then all of a sudden he has to go to one side of the ball. You got to protect the money and stuff like that. McCaffrey's a similar situation. It's fun when he has that workload of 20, 25 carries plus 6 catches. Yeah. It's fun until the injury happens, right?
Yes.
It's fun seeing him look like the running back mm-hmm. when he was his first year of Carolina and then to see where it is now. You know, it's really fun as long as he stays healthy.
Absolutely. And obviously, you reflecting on that with Nick Chubb as well getting hurt last night. We send our prayers to Nick Chubb. But coming back, we're going to break now. Coming back from the break, we're going to talk Niners' weaknesses. You know, what stuck out to them is the offensive line, the secondary. There were a couple eye-opening things, but we're going to catch that on the other side of the break. Return of the Empire, Sacktown Sports. Back in a minute.
Welcome back to the Return of the Empire podcast.
With Emil Fragoso and Nate Littlefield.
He really distributes it accurately and has since he's taken over as the starting quarterback. Toss play McCaffrey with blockers in front. Has a crease. McCaffrey with speed down the sideline. McCaffrey one man to beat. A little hesitation. And Akello Witherspoon finally able to bring him down.
That is McCaffrey's big 50-yard run in the first quarter. McCaffrey, man, that was... had a little words for former 49er Akello Witherspoon afterwards as well. You know, we spoke to him about afterwards, and he said, you know, it was just normal chatter, you know, saying a little pleasantries. I don't know if you saw Catch the Mouths there. I don't think it was anything pleasant said.
Yeah, but that's football, right?
Football.
That's and football talk.
Man, I love these intros. I love the Star Wars theme. Big Star Wars fan myself, and episode 3 is one of my favorite episodes, too, so this makes me super happy.
So my Star Wars backstory is that I had seen none of the movies until about 18 months ago.
Okay.
Now I've seen all 9. I started watching that Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
Yes.
So I have come to this fun Star Wars galaxy far, far away, and I've joined the club.
We're happy to have you, Kyle.
And damn right.
And we're happy to have all of you here on the YouTube as well as listening live from your cars or wherever you listen to Sacktown Sports, sacktownsports.com. Return to the Empire. I am your host, Emiliano Fragoso, joined, of course, by my guy, Kyle Ledbetter. My co-host, Nate, is out today, unfortunately, feeling a little under the weather. Nate, we wish you all the love and hope you get back on your feet very, very soon. But as they say, the show must go on, and the show is definitely going on for the 49ers, 2-0 after the first 2 weeks on the road, even though Levi's South is kind of a home game, and SoFi Stadium, whatever. It's still a road win. They'll take it. They're now at home this week, Thursday Night Football, the Giants, and we will get to that in the next segment. But first, we got to talk about the Niners in terms of overall outlook going into week 3. Now, week 2 really showed us that there were some weaknesses on the Niners, and I don't want to just say the secondary or the defense, because that they fixed it in the second half. They got it together. But the offensive line has definitely been a conversation, you know, for a lot of people. And I think that, you know, on the left side of the line, it's pretty good. Trent Williams, Aaron Banks, Jake Brendel at center. But the right side with Colton McKivitt, Spencer Burford, they're still kind of a work in progress. And while they had a better game for sure, they were picking on him a little bit, I would say, Kyle.
Yeah, and last week we talked about possible players to add at a right tackle or a right guard position. I think a little bit later we'll talk about the cap space again because, I mean, not much has changed in the last week, right? They didn't have the most impressive performance in the world. The 49ers held up pretty well in terms. If you look at the statistics, I mean, they were averaging almost 5 yards a carry. 160 rushing yards was, I think, one of the four top performances in the league last week. So, I mean, on paper, you'd think strong offensive line play is a byproduct of good running game.
Yes.
But, you know, in practical, you know, looking at the tape and watching the game itself, you kind of recognize, hey, the Rams got pressure here, here, and here, broke up a couple of passes they were looking at. You can point to Brock Purdy's numbers and say a couple of those incompletions probably on offensive line not holding up long enough to get receivers in space.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're just looking at the pressures I have them here from PFF, the Niners allowed. Pretty good day overall. Aaron Banks, Trent Williams, I mentioned prior, clean sheets all the way through. Jake Brendel had one pressure allowed. Colt McKivitz, one pressure allowed. But it was Spencer Burford, three pressure allowed on the day. He finished with a 27, I believe, overall PFF score. Not great. Not great at all after having, you know, a struggle week one as well. And I think that's going to be the real work in progress. And Chris Forster, their offensive line, you know, run game coordinator, they were talking about it today, in recent times, you know, it's not good enough. It's got to be better all across the board. Not just Spencer, not just Colton, but also Trent and Aaron. They got to pick these guys up. And I just think, you know, second year for Spencer, but I think he's definitely a work in progress.
I think so, and obviously Trent Williams makes your life easier because he's one of the most valuable players in the NFL, period. I know we were on a show last week and we were like, who's the most valuable 49er player? Nick Bosa on the offensive side of the ball. Trent Williams.
It's simple.
It is Trent Williams, and that's going to make your life a little bit easier, but I'm sure the coaches and the players will get back in there and they'll try and sniff through the results to figure out something good to bring out against the New York Giants.
Yes, there you
Excuse me. The San Francisco 49ers are playing the Giants.
Yes they are. Yes. and the Giants, you know, they don't have a great pass rush. They have an okay one. They got Kayvon Thibodeau there, you know, but I really can't name a lot of the other pass rushers there on the Giants. So it should be hopefully a better day for them, and Kayvon might pick on the right side a little bit more. But, you know, another week of practice, even though it's a short week, should help them. And, you know, as the Niners, they have a more run-heavy scheme as well, similar to the Giants. I wonder if these two clash of styles is going to be really indicative of the score at the end. It could be a low-scoring game for both sides. You never know.
I think the Giants have an Ojulari brother.
Aziz Ojulari.
Aziz Ojulari is the Giant. I think his brother plays for the Cardinals now.
I think you're correct.
BJ Ojulari was at LSU last year.
BJ and Aziz.
Yeah, so I believe Ojulari is the other edge rusher for the Giants going into this game, and I think the thing you got to focus on is Kayvon Thibodeau. If the Giants are smart, they'll line up Thibodeau against the right side of the 49ers defensive line. He's beaten double teams before. He can beat double teams again occasionally, but I would assume that's the direction the Giants go. I know Thibodeau normally lines up on the left side and will rush left edge, but I mean, pick your poison with the with the 49ers, right? It's like, we want to focus on stopping the run, we'll put him on the left side. If we want to pass rush, we'll put him on the right. I mean, it's kind of pick your poison for a Giants defense that last year finished 32nd in the league in run defense.
That is not good, Kyle, is it?
It's worse than the Chargers, who the season before that in 2021 had the worst rush defense ever. So,
good old Chargers to set records, right? You know, just good old Chargers.
Yes, and Dexter Lawrence is very good. I don't understand how they have Dexter Lawrence in the interior and still can't stop the run. It's always been confusing.
Yeah, Dexter Lawrence and I'd say Kayvon Thibodeau are the two best passers they have, you know, the Pro Bowl guys, especially Dexter Lawrence, who quietly is one of the better D tackles. But I think that Aaron Banks and Jake Brendel are going to be able to double team and wrap him up pretty well. But in terms of the right side and the blocking, and this kind of goes to the Niners at the playmakers, right, is that George Kittle, tight end for the Niners, he's used a lot on that right side to help out, you know, Colton McKivitz, Spencer Burford, to kind of have chip blocks here and there. And because of that, he's not as involved in the pass rush or in the passing game, I should say, you know, this early on so far week two, you know, looking at the stats, 3 catches in week 1, 3 catches in week 2, 49 total yards and 9 total targets. You know, nothing inspiring. If you're a fantasy owner that has George Kittle, I'm very sorry, but it looks like he's more on the run side that right now, it seems. But going forward, should that be more of a focal point, Kyle, getting George Kittle more involved?
If Brandon Ayuk is going to be out, definitely. I think that's definitely a game plan. But I don't really know exactly what the best usage for George Kittle is at this stage of his career, because I've seen two-game stretches where he's had 21 catches, 300 yards, four touchdowns, and then I've seen him disappear, but then you look at his Pro Football Focus grades, and he's like, oh yeah, one of the better run blockers in the NFL, and obviously he's battled injuries. So to answer your question, I don't know what the best usage of George Kittle is at this stage based on need for the Niners.
Absolutely. I mean, he's 29 years old, going to turn 30 before the end of this month. And, you know, he's a lot of wear and tear on his body, but he's used so... I think he's the best run-blocking tight end in the NFL. I really don't think it's that close. I think what he does, he is the best at. I'll give Travis Kelce the best, you know, all-around tight end in the NFL. But what George Kittle does for the Niners is just all the dirty work you can ask for. And I think that's what makes George so great. But like you said, to your point, with Brandon Ayuk possibly out this week, they got to turn to someone else. And Brock and Kittle early on, especially last year, really showed some connection. You know, he had 11 touchdowns last year with Brock under center. So I really hope they use him more Thursday against the Giants, but you can never know in a Kyle offense.
And it also depends on how they want. I mean, they script all their plays at the beginning of the game, right?
They do.
So it depends how they want to jump out the gate. Do they want to, say on the first drive of the game, they have eight plays set up. Yes. Do they want to just go right into attack the run game of the Giants, knowing that the Giants historically have not been very strong in the rushing game and gave up 100 yards to James Conner last week?
Yeah, James Conner, not really inspiring. He's a good, look, I don't want to give him, James Conner, a good running back when he's healthy, but not like a superstar by any means.
No, certainly not. James Conner, who is now, I think, in his seventh year in the league at this point. I want to say sixth or seventh.
That makes me feel old, because I remember James Conner being like young star for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and now he's with the Cardinals, and
now he's one of the longest tenured running backs in the NFL, because running backs don't age like that.
They do not, but James has aged pretty well despite all the injuries. He's aged pretty, pretty well. So not surprised he did well, but against the Giants, you know, run defense that has Dexter Lawrence, he's expected to be held a little more in check.
Yeah, so again, depends on what the 49ers want to do. If they want to commit to the run game, if they want to get McCaffrey and potentially get Elijah Mitchell involved in this game, then go with the twin tight end formations, maybe even put Juszczyk in there as a run blocker potentially, and then see where it goes from there. But it all depends on how they want to attack the Giants defense.
When they run that I formation then put Juice in motion, like, it's almost unstoppable because Juszczyk's out there so fast. Kyle Juszczyk does not get enough love. Kyle, you're great. We love you, man. You are incredible what you do. The best fullback in the NFL and has been for many, many years.
Yeah, it's like the sixth Pro Bowler that the 49ers have on offense that no one talks about is Kyle Juszczyk, and I'm glad he got that first touchdown in the Super Bowl all those years ago.
I know, and then got one last year. Brock Purdy's first touchdown pass, by the way, went to Kyle Juszczyk against Miami Dolphins last year. Fun fact.
All right, so I want to pivot to the defensive side of the ball, because you mentioned it earlier real quick. So I know we've made it this long into the show without saying Puka Nacua, but I'm going to say Puka Nacua now. Like, people were saying after the game that the Rams were running a basic offense with similar, like, basically run plays, and that was enough to pick apart the Niners defense. Yes. Obviously, they turned it around in the second half. So do you look at that as like a Steve Wilks adjustment thing? Is that the players adjusting? How did you look at that?
I think it's more of a Steve Wilks thing. I think the Niners defense, a lot of them are returners. They know what to expect from a Rams game. I think Steve Wilks didn't know what they're going to throw out there. You know, they have a lot of different options, and you never know how healthy Stafford is till you play him, especially after last year's back issues. He looked to be like Matthew Stafford of old with the Detroit Lions, and he was just slinging the ball around there in the first half, over 200 yards passing by halftime. And Puka Nacua, you know, a fifth-round pick from BYU. No one knew who this guy was, but man, setting the rookie record with 25 receptions through two games, the most of any wide receiver as a rookie for the first two games. And Puka playing through an oblique injury really made the Niners secondary, including Chevarius Ward, who wanted to be an All-Pro this year, look really lackluster. Week two.
Well, it was a bold effort for Chevarius Ward. He gave it the best he could, but I don't think a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro is in his future this year. It may be a Pro Bowl, but an All-Pro doesn't look to be in his future this year. But I'm really interested to see how the game I mean, obviously, they played better in the second half, but they didn't really change all that much defensively. They just started getting better tackles, breaking up a couple passes. Like, they didn't really do any, like, they didn't go in the halftime locker room and change everything, wipe off the metaphorical whiteboard. They kind of just did the same thing and executed better.
The only thing I can really say they kind of changed is that they sent more blitzes. You know, they had Fred Warner come off, and whenever Fred Warner is blitzing, it seems to be perfect because he just finds that the A or the B gap, it just slots right in there and gets a sack. Steve Wilkes needs to do more without sending Fred Warner into the house because Fred's awesome. But in terms of defense and secondary, the Niners also added someone today. I don't know if you heard this, Kyle. The Niners added former Dallas Cowboys cornerback Anthony Brown to their 53-man roster today. So a little bit more veteran help for the Niners in the secondary, you know, offsetting, you know, Tre'Davious Ward, Deommodore Lenore, Ambry Thomas, who's now out, you know, limited with a knee injury, Sammy Womack, who's on IR with a knee injury, Isaiah Oliver, who is the unsung hero, but just another guy to add to the Niners, you know, plethora of riches. They want to have a deep secondary room, and I think Anthony Brown, despite injuries he's had in the past, I think he's a very serviceable cornerback for sure.
I think so. I don't know how much playing time he'll get, say, in the next 3 weeks.
Sure.
But it's just nice to have options in the tank because, what was it, 2 years ago in the playoff game? Not the one they played against, the Cowboys playoff game a couple of years ago where they were just like scrambling to find anyone to put at the cornerback position. So it's just nice to have bodies in there. But like you said, Ward, Deommodore Lenore, those are the key guys that they really need.
Yeah, and they've been really interchanging, you know, Lenore and Oliver, trying to figure out what this nickelback spot. And I would love to see them kind of figure out who's it going to be? Because I think Deommodore Lenore has proven that he can be an outside guy, but he also is very good, versatile, going into the inside when he has to. And I kind of hope that Anthony Brown or Isaiah Oliver, who really showed out last week, I really hope that they kind of solidified their spot now, even though with injuries it kind of happens. But I hope that they can kind of stick to a rotation and keep it that way because you got to build chemistry with your guys.
Not enough nickel corners in the NFL. That's the thing that we're learning. There's not enough people who can play that position well, and it feels like every team is trying to find their guy. And unless you're, the Bengals with Mike Hilton, it feels like you're constantly scrambling to find anyone who can play nickel corner in the modern NFL.
Mike Hilton, Eli Apple, you know, just guys out there that get a lot of bad
rap. Eli Apple even wasn't signed until August this year. Like, he's not at the top end. I mean, I've seen Kansas City try and run McDuffie in the slot, and like maybe that'll work out for them, but I mean, everyone's trying to figure out options.
Cornerbacks, unless you're a top tier one, like running backs, feel like a dime a dozen to a certain degree.
I guess, but I think it's hard to play nickel corner. It might be the hardest. I mean, pass rusher is hard because you're constantly like going one on one against someone who's like 340 pounds. But nickel corner might be the hardest position to play in the NFL.
I kind of agreed. Cornerback in general, hard position to play. But in terms of Niners, we're going to talk more about this week's matchup, Thursday Night Football, New York Giants on the other side of this break as well. The salary cap. What did John Lynch say about that recently? We got more on that after this Turn of the Empire, Sacktown Sports. We'll be back in a minute.
He's got to cover everything.
Here's Samuel. To the edge, steps through a tackle, now cuts it back. Deebo Samuel through traffic for the touchdown.
I love this. I can just say this has been a lot of fun with Kyle today, and I love Star Wars. I love the theme. It sounds so good with the Niners rejoiners as well with the touchdown. That was Deebo Samuel on his, 11-yard rushing touchdown. It was kind of a long handoff from Brock Purdy, but he scampered around, made a few defenders miss, and walked his way into the end zone. And Kyle said today, he said Deebo's in the best shape I've seen him in maybe ever.
Do we explain the song to people listening, or do we just have this be an inside joke for only the Star Wars people?
Only the Star Wars people. Let's let it roll.
Only the Star Wars people get to know.
Because we got still a good amount to talk about. We got to preview Thursday Night Football, and we will do that in just a second. But we got to talk about John Lynch and the salary cap situation. Now, if you don't know, Niners cleared up $41.2 million in cap room with restructuring Eric Armstead's deal, Trent Williams' deal, and George Kittle's deal after they signed Nick Bosa and gave him a massive signing bonus as well. So why would they do that? Why would they give up all this money? Well, John kind of mentioned it today. John was talking with Matt Maiocca, NBC Sports Bay Area, and he said, while we could use it this year, really, we always look at the cap for 3 years out. Obviously, we have all that room this year, but really, it's to create room for future years because we roll everything over. It helps us in future years because it creates some room we're going to need. And they're definitely going to need some room because they have some star players they're going to have to pay here shortly. Brandon Ayuk probably going to be looking for a massive extension after this season. Talanoa Hufanga, if he continues his all-pro way, is going to look for a massive contract extension as well. So I think it's kind of smart for the Niners to roll it over and, wait and see what happens.
One of the best commitments an owner or a governor, whatever you want to call it, can commit to winning in the NFL is pay money up front.
Yes.
It is. I mean, you have to take out cash, obviously, and you can put that against future earnings and stuff. But, take out the cash, pay the money up front. Yeah. You can totally beat the salary cap that way. And it's such a competitive advantage. The fact that the Yorks paid out $80 million in one day in signing bonuses is going to set up the 49ers so well for years to come. I know hearing 41 million, people are instantly thinking of who they could potentially get with $41 million, but that's not necessarily the game always. Like, you don't need to compromise your long-term future. For example, in the way that the Rams did. The Rams did something similar, traded for Von Miller. Von Miller left in free agency. They got a compensatory pick, but at the same time, they kind of put themselves in a difficult cap situation because of the dead cap that was coming over. And, you know, there's a report this week that they are paying, I think, $75 million in dead cap this year. So, you know, just because it's there doesn't necessarily mean they have to go out and spend it right away, because it'll help a sustainable future.
And that's what they're looking for. They're looking for sustainability for the long term to connect this current nucleus of star players to the next nucleus. And that starts with Nick Bosa and paying him. And obviously, Niner fans, are they going to pay Nick Bosa? Are they going to do this? Why are they not paying him his full deal? Well, they did. And guess what? They gave him a $50 million signing bonus, one of the largest ever. So don't ever say Jed York is cheap, folks. Jed York will pay his people promptly as long as he feels it is necessary to go win Super Bowl number 6.
Next question is, will they pay Hufanga? Or will they pay D'Amador Lenore? Like, that'll be the next question. And look, that's part of what this money is. It's to keep the core together without having to lose a key part of the team. I mean, you know, you mentioned the old core connecting with the new core. Like, you might have to end up eventually saying goodbye to Sacramento's Rick Armstead. You might one day have to say goodbye to George Kittle. Maybe he won't be a career 49er, but at the very least, this gives you flexibility to potentially keep those guys around or move in another direction.
Absolutely. And it also helps that Brock Purdy's contract is, you know, 81st overall in terms of quarterbacks, less than both Sam Darnold and Brandon Allen. His backups are making this season a little under $1 million per year annually for the next, I think, 3 years. Man, that's crazy. The quarterback, as talented as Brock Purdy, is making less than $1 million.
If they want to drive 49ers fans even more insane and go with the franchise tag route, you can add a fourth year, a fifth year, before you really got to break the bank for Brock Purdy.
I don't think they'll do that, though. If Brock, you know, delivers a Super Bowl, I think they might, you know, paint the town red and give him whatever he wants.
Well, that's a big if. That's a big if.
For the future, though. Let's focus on the present now. And the present now is that they're not going to do anything with it probably the rest of the year, but John didn't rule it out. Again, trade deadline is Halloween this year. You never know, so spooky things can happen. Maybe they can add another cornerback. Maybe they can add another offensive lineman. Maybe another defensive lineman, too, like a Brian Burns. Ooh, interesting. I don't know. Just saying.
Spooky when Montez Sweat walks into your locker room.
Montez Sweat's good.
I know. That would be great.
Montez Sweat's very talented, very athletic, kind of the thing Chris Kocurek looks for in the defensive line. But anyways, let's focus on the present. And presently, the Niners have a matchup with the New York Giants on Thursday Night Football in, 48 hours.
48? That's not a lot of hours.
No, it is not. No, it is not, Kyle. But quick turnaround from Sunday's win in L.A. to come back home to face the New York Giants, the official home opener of the 2023 season for the 49ers. I will be there. I will be covering the team. But Kyle, you have the unique insight because you covered the Cardinals as well. And the Cardinals, well, they played the Giants last week.
They did.
How did they fare?
They did really, really well in the first half of the game. They did really, really well in the first, 5 minutes of the second half.
Yes.
After that, they went from up 28-7 to losing 31-28.
To the Cardinals and Joshua Dobbs, who continues to look like a decent quarterback. I can't believe I'm saying that, but a decent quarterback.
I think he might be the best quarterback ever that has never won a start. That might be the previous record, I think, was Zach Mettenberger, who went 0-14 as a starter. But
yes,
Dobbs might be the best quarterback that has never won an NFL game.
I know, and he showed off his legs too, which I was kind of shocked. I didn't know he had that little speed to him.
Josh Dobbs is an interesting quarterback, but I have a quiz question for you about the Giants.
Sure.
In that game against the notably not as skilled Cardinals defense, do you know when the last negative play of the game recorded was for the Giants? At what time was the last negative play the Giants had on offense?
The Giants' last negative play?
Yes.
Like on offense? The Giants had, correct? The Giants did not get yards.
Yes, the Giants had went backwards.
The fourth quarter?
Nope. The third quarter.
What?
With 7 minutes and 40 seconds to play, at the time the Giants had 7 points. They did not. That was a negative 3 yard run by Barkley. The rest of the game, it was either incompletions or they moved forward.
Wow. That's. Look, Jonathan Gannon, man, trying to win some games. I don't know about that. They might be trying to tank for Caleb Williams. That's all I'm
saying.
Jonathan
Gannon's trying to win some games. The organization, that's another question.
I think Michael Bidwell would rather, you know, sit this season out and try, you know, get the top pick.
Can you name anyone in the cornerback room for the Cardinals?
I think Marco Wilson's there.
Yes, you got one.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's kind of all I know.
I think their number two is someone named Antonio Hamilton.
Oh, you are correct. Yes, I am. And the Niners will play the Cardinals next week, but this week they got the Giants who faced the Cardinals, and they look pretty good. You know, Daniel Jones finished 26-37, 321 passing, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, 103.5 passer rating. Not too shabby for a guy, you know, as a running quarterback, but, you know, not the best, but, you know, they came back and they showed out resilience, and that's kind of this whole Giants team is, you know, they fight till the end. They're very resilient under Brian Daboll.
The biggest thing for the Giants was the intermediate and deep balls that they had.
Yes.
Coming right out the half, Jalen Hyatt, who's their rookie receiver,
mm-hmm.
he had, I want to say, a 40-something yard completion right
yes.
out the gate. He had 3 catches. I think all of them were over 17 yards at least in the game. Like
mm-hmm.
the big play was what got the Giants back into the game. And granted, when you're down 20-0, you need some big plays in order to come back. But the fact that Daniel Jones was able to connect with Hyatt, was able to connect with Waller on a
yes.
couple intermediate receptions. The Giants have a respectable passing attack. It's not like
yes.
the playoff game last year where it was like Hodgins, who they picked up in week 12, who was waived by the Bills, had 100 yards against the Vikings.
I couldn't even tell you who was on. Like, it was bad. It was so bad watching the Giants offense last year. The fact that they went to the playoffs is an indictment of Brian Daboll being a hell of a coach.
One of my favorite stats of all time, and I'll weave this in here, is in 2021, the last season of Jason Garrett, the Giants' top 4 leading receivers that season, which I think was like Ingram, Shepard, Slayton,
yeah.
and someone else, combined had fewer yards of offense than Ja'Marr Chase.
That's wild. That's just crazy.
And none of those players, other than I think Shepard, are still on the team at this point.
Wow.
So they have rebuilt this thing, and I mean, we'll get into the Saquon Barkley part of it next, but like,
yeah.
obviously they're a run-based offense that has at least a respectable passing game.
Yeah, and you just brought up Saquon Barkley. Obviously 17 rushes, 63 yards, rushing, 1 TD. Not, you know, the best day overall for Saquon, but then, you know, he left early as well. You know, twisted his ankle pretty bad there under the pile, had to be helped off the field afterwards. It was described as swollen, and while the MRIs have come back and said it's a regular ankle sprain, he will probably miss a few games here. That is probably including Thursday Night Football. Well, wait! Maybe not. Brian Daboll said today that, you know, they're going to take it up to a game-time decision with Saquon Barkley. You know, you never know. He's a fast healer. He's feeling better this Tuesday at, you know, right now it is, you know, 6:47 local time, 9:47 on the East Coast. So you never know. But frankly, it'd be a real shock of me if Saquon Barkley, you know, suited up Thursday Night Football.
So if you're listening to the podcast version of this, and anyone who wants to listen to the podcast, SacktownSports.com,
yep.
if you want to find this episode on podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, Saquon Barkley might be ruled out by this point. I felt like I was going to operate under the assumption he wasn't going to play in this game
mm-hmm.
just based on the evidence. But, I mean, Brian Daboll wants you to know that he might play. And is that just trying to mess with the Niners game plan?
This is just New England Patriots sorcery they're doing. They're just trying to, you know, the competitive advantage or whatever the heck this is. They're just trying to, you know, keep it interesting going up to game time. But Saquon Barkley, I don't think will be active for week 3's matchup with the Giants. But you know who will be active at running back?
Who's that?
Matt Breida.
Wait, I know him.
I know him too. Former 49ers running back Matt Breida, who will be looking to get revenge on his former club. Maybe?
Sort of.
I mean, they left on good terms.
Yeah. I mean, he also had a like career revival when he came back to San Francisco.
Yeah, he did.
Didn't really. He was on the Dolphins for a minute, right? Did he follow McDaniel to the Dolphins? Am I remembering that correctly?
I think that was before McDaniel.
Okay.
I know he was the Giants the last couple of years.
Yeah, I knew he was a Dolphin, and then he had a minute on Buffalo,
yeah.
and then now he's been on the Giants. But I mean, Breida is a fine running back.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Thomas, their offensive lineman,
yeah.
is probably also going to be out. Has he been ruled out already for the game?
I don't believe he has. I believe he's trending towards a limited participant this week. I think it was back-to-back days a limited participant. But, you know, even at you know, 75%, say he plays, 75%, you know, whatever. That's still a compromise, you know, left tackle. You never want your left tackle to be compromised. And, you know, for the Giants, that's kind of really their bread and butter is their running game. And if they can't run the ball with their zone, you know, zone reads or whatnot, it's going to be a long, long night in the Bay Area.
Especially with Nick Bosa coming off of his strong side. If you don't have Andrew Thomas in there, if you have insert generic backup offensive lineman, I'm just going to say for the record, Russell Okun. I know it's not Russell Okun, but if you have a generic offensive tackle in there against Nick Bosa, it's not going to go so hot for you.
Yeah, I'm just looking through the injury report right now. And yes, Andrew Thomas is a limited participant with a hamstring injury today and yesterday on their practice report. Saquon Barkley did not practice. Ben Bredesen, their guard, has a concussion, did not practice as well, because that could be another out for them as well. And if they're banged up on that offensive line, just I really see no chance of them winning. The line is set at 10 right now for the Niners, minus 10. This could be a blowout, and it could be very early.
The thing that was also interesting is that the over-under, I think, is only like 44.5 right now,
yeah.
Which...
Low scoring.
Low scoring and 10 points in favor of the 49ers means this is a game the Niners probably have handily. With or without Ayuk, with or without any, you know, insert player on the injury report, they should have it.
Look, I'm going to throw out a number here for you, Kyle. Let's say the Giants offense scores 15 points. You taking the over or the under on that?
That would mean the Niners would have to score 30. I would stay away.
Just not touching it.
No, I would need to know the Giants are going to have at least two touchdowns.
Yeah, and just in terms of the backup left tackle they would have, it's this fellow named Joshua Ezidu. I don't really know who that is. I think he's a youngster. I don't think he's as good as Andrew Thomas, though, so that's going to be a problem for them.
Is he better than Mike Remmers? That's my question. that's my goal for, like, offensive linemen. Are you better or worse PFF-wise than Mike Remmers? Because that's, like, the most average offensive lineman I can think of.
Absolutely. And if you're the New York Giants, you probably feel better going into this week, you know, being one and one, not 0-2, not as desperate to need a win. So I feel like finishing this week 1-2 wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for the Giants, but, you know, not the best in the NFC East, which is, you know, looking pretty strong with the Eagles and then also with the Cowboys.
I don't think it's going to go the way the Giants are hoping. Also, Washington's 2-0. That's kind of weird.
Every other NFC East team is doing well except for the Giants, who, you know, seem to be struggling a little bit, even defensively having some issues as well.
Yeah, and I think the Giants have a tough schedule coming up, too. I'm trying to remember what it is, but here we go. So they play Niners, Seahawks, Dolphins, Bills, and then the Washington insert team name there. And then then they get a reprieve by playing Zach Wilson. But, I mean...
It's still a tough team defensively. You know, they're a good team. The battle of MetLife.
But, yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like either of us are believers in the Giants this year, so...
Look, man, it all depends on Daniel Jones. They gave him that big, massive extension, and he has looked... First game was bad. Second game was a lot better, but it was against the Arizona Cardinals, who, frankly, are probably a cakewalk.
We were both in studio when that Daniel Jones extension broke, and both of us at the same time were just like, why would they do that?
Oh, I was like, no, what did they just do? It was worse than the Geno one. It was way worse than the Geno one. I was like, they just made that man $40 million a year, and they won't pay Saquon Barkley $10 million?
At least with the Geno one, the Seahawks can get out of it after one season. The Giants are locked into this deal for three seasons.
Look, you got to give the Giants owner credit. They think they found a quarterback since Eli Manning. You got to give him something, I guess. But I've never been a big Daniel Jones guy ever since he got drafted. And he had a good season. I'll give him that. He had a good last year, and he got paid in a contract year. But sometimes when you make that money, it changes a few thinkings.
I'm usually skeptical of the people who have one above-average season and three not-great seasons. I'm usually skeptical of those players.
The Derek Carr effect, Jimmy Garoppolo effect. Kind of, you know, similar realm, I guess, to that.
I guess Mitchell Trubisky would be a little too disrespectful, but... I used to use is Jared Goff, but now Jared Goff has a sample size of like three good seasons and two bad seasons and one awful season.
He'll have
so
a sample
know.
Size of two good games and three bad games. It's the Jared Goof effect, I call him.
Jared Goof, I like that. Yeah. How have I never heard that before?
I don't know. I call him Jared Goof. Whenever he has a bad play, I call him Jared Goof.
Oh, you made a Jared Goof.
He goofed up.
He goofed up.
Anyways, prediction for this game. I said Niners winning handily, again, scoring 30 points. I have it 31 to, let's say 13. Let's be kind.
I'll say 28-17.
Ooh, a little closer.
I mean, I didn't say when the Giants would score those points, but...
A little garbage time action like McVay got in at the end there?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe the Giants score a touchdown with, 2 minutes left to play, and then they're doing, like, double onside kick or something.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe. But yeah, I don't expect a lot here. And in terms of breakout guys, I can see McCaffrey having a huge game, you know, running that outside zone away from Dexter Lawrence, away from Kayvon Thibodeau. And I just think the Niners have too much talent. It's kind of their whole thing with everyone. They just got too much talent on offense and on defense, man. Daniel Jones, I'm really praying for you, man. If you run the scramble stuff you do against other teams, you're going to get your head taken off by Dre Greenlaw or Fred Warner. It's just going to happen, dude.
How many turnovers in the game for the 49ers defense?
Two turnovers.
Daniel Jones has a fumbling problem.
Oh, I could see him get clapped at least once and in the backfield by Nick Bosa. I think it could be a statement game for the defensive line after having, you know, lackluster first 2 weeks.
I like it. I'll go three. I'll say Greenlaw gets involved there, too. Let's go three turnovers.
Okay. I'll give you that. 2-3. It's pretty similar. But, yeah, that is it for the Return of the Empire, Episode 3, live from the studio, Sacktown Sports. Kyle, thank you, my man, of course, for filling in for Nate today. Nate will be back next week. We will have a special guest next week as well for Cardinals Week. Our guy probably in Arizona, Tyler Drake of AZ Sports, will probably be joining us. I got to confirm that with him. But, yeah, until then, we'll be back here 6-7 every Tuesday. And until then, you all stay well. See you soon, faithful. Go Niners.